Blog Talk Radio.
This is world champion D.E. Chambers, president of the Amateur Organization of Karate and multi-Greek award winner. I would like to welcome you to Professor Gary Lee's Kwasanon Radio Talk Show, featuring news, special announcements, special one-on-one interviews with stars of sport karate. Thank you for listening. Buckle up and enjoy the show.
This program is sponsored by the American Martial Arts Alliance Foundation and Elite Publications. Everyone has a story. You just have to get it out. Visit Elite Publications at www.elitepublications.org.
Well, aloha and mahalo to everybody. The time is finally here. The legend, just a couple of days away, the graduation of the great Mike Stone to get over 10 history black belts, the roasting of the amazing Jerry Smith, and the woman of the hour, Karen Eden Herdman, Saturday night. We've got a show planned for you. And I really hope that if you're listening, you can make it to the Legends in Houston, Texas, at the beautiful five-star hotel, the West Chase Marriott. Tonight we have a very special show because there's a man that's put me on the air for almost 10 years in your home every Tuesday night. And I wanted to ask him to be my special guest tonight so I can talk a little bit about who he is and what he's done and what he's doing for the Sport Karate Museum. He is my producer, and I want to bring him on right now. Hachi Bowen, are you there?
I am, sir. I am.
Wow. Just a few days away to be rock and roll.
Well, I know, and I'm excited. I've already started packing my bags, and we're going to be having some fun.
Well, you know what, Hunty? I was talking to Carlos today, and I was telling him, golly bones, he's 83. Mike Stone is 80. Bill Wallace is 79. Sam Chapman is 80. I mean, Alex Steen is 83. Roy Kerman is 77. We're going to be kicking butt with the old folks reunion this weekend for sure. But you know what?
Yes, sir.
You've done something really, really special. For 9 years, you put me into everybody's homes every Tuesday night. And I want to say thank you before I get you in a corner tonight and start asking about who and what and how you started. So let's do that right now. How did you start in the martial arts? How old were you?
I was 21, and, I got started in the martial arts because, you know, as most stories that you hear about, you know, kids get into martial arts and parents want to put them in there so they can defend themselves. You know, I grew up as an only child, and I was really, you know, I had a mom that loved me and pampered me and, you know, a dad that tried to make me hard knocks, and I tell folks I was a change of that generation. You know, we had a generational change, and I was part of that generational change because, you know, I didn't want to be involved in farming. And, you know, I left home not knowing where I was going, and I moved to Raleigh, North Carolina. And I was working on a job at Rockwell International, and I was about to be fired, and was a guy on my job. We didn't get along, and someone told me he was a black belt in something called Taekwondo. I had no earthly idea what that was, but I seen Enter the Dragon, and I knew what Bruce Lee had done to those guys, whether it was, you know, nonfiction or not. I knew, I saw what happened, and I didn't want this person to do that to me. So the next morning, I went home, and I called every martial arts school in the city. Fortunately for me, there was only one school that answered the telephone, and that was Karate International. I had no idea what it was about. I just knew I didn't want to get beat up anymore, you know. Right, exactly. And, yep, then that was the only school that answered telephone. I could have been in Joe Blow's school or whomever's school, but, you know, God was good that, you know, that they answered, that someone answered telephone. I went in for my first class. And, you know, this was during a time that the instructor had to, you know, you had to want to study karate because all the abuse that they gave you. And I remember the instructor, he's, you know, after the class, he took me in the office. He says, I just want to study karate. He says, let me show you karate. He put me about a foot away from the wall, put his fist in my chest. He almost shoved me through the wall and going, I just want to study karate. And he says, sit down and sign up. I said, okay.
That's funny. That was in Greenville, North Carolina, right?
No, that was actually in Raleigh. That's where they opened their first school was, you know, in Raleigh. And you know, the outcome could have been totally different, but, you know, they came out of Chicago, out of the Ohio area from the Ohio Judo and Karate, and they came to North Carolina. And Dale was from Greenville, North Carolina, to open up a commercial school. And you can imagine during this time back in 1972, that wasn't really heard of, you know, Grandmaster Joan Reed, but that was pretty much it, you know, selling memberships on contract and all those types of things was really taboo in the martial arts community.
How do you get involved with the Who's Who books?
Well, you know, my publishing goes back to Dale Brooks and Mr. Wellendorf, you know, and, you know, and on that level, you know, about, because this sort of all connects, you know, not only did they start a commercial school, they started a real franchise. They had schools in Winston-Salem. They had schools in Charlotte, North Carolina, Winston-Salem, North Carolina, you know, when I really first started. And you know, Dale Brooks was a publisher. And so back in the 80s, you know, well, actually in 79, might have been 80, they published the Who's Who in American Karate. I was one of the first people. I just made black belt, and I was in there, and I think you said you were in there, and it was people from all across the country. I was there when that happened, and those were some really exciting times. They published that book. For several years, they published Key Kata in Combat. In my opinion, one of the greatest books ever written was Key Kata in Combat. And so as Mr. Wellendorf, you know, matured, Dale Brooks passed away, I wanted to do something to remember them. I was already publishing books, you know, so I decided just to publish a book just for Mr. Wellendorf in some way to honor Dale Brooks. And so that's what we did. We published in 2015 Who's Who in the Martial Arts. The American Martial Arts Alliance, the American Martial Arts Hall of Fame was already going on. So that was already in existence. And we did it every year. Our focus was sport karate. And so we did that and to honor him. And there was no intention for a second book to ever be published. But from that book, we got so much inspiration of people sharing their stories. And, you know, Grandmaster Corley says, you know, hey, why don't we do this one more year? And so we did in 2016. And we released the Cynthia Rothrock edition, which was released in Charlotte, North Carolina. And that's just the beginning. It's just sort of sparked, you know, we've got close to 2,000 people that have been from all around the world that have been featured in the book. And so I've accepted that as a part of what my life purpose is, and that is to, you know, get people to sit still, write about their lives, and to determine whether or not they're wasting a perfectly good life. And so that is the summary of the book. And now the book, that one book is turned into nine, that nine is turned into an international publishing company, and now we're publishing for people, you know, around the world, you know, just from doing a good deed.
Well, you know what? I pulled out my book. I was in the first one that Jan and Dale did, the brown and white one. And It was a big deal. It's when I landed my job at Six Flags, and it was my first big publicity boost, and it was a big deal. And I was in the second one, too, the blue one. And you know, I'm really proud of the fact that a few years ago, you published a History General book, and that was very powerful, and we're going to be selling those in a couple of days. But I want to say thank you, because your vision and what you've done with the books and honoring people like Master E and Cindy and Michael J. White and my buddy Bill Wallace. By the way, I want to surprise you. I'm bringing in Bill Wallace Friday night just to surprise my son. Isn't that cool? So Friday night, I got a big after party for you guys. Because, you know, Bill's sacrificing because, you know, he makes his living going to seminars and stuff. And he's coming in just for me and Mike, and I thought it was pretty cool. And you're going to be having a booth, aren't you? You're going to have an Alliance booth or a publishing booth at the vendor show. And Dolly Bub, you also have a special moment at, I think it's 3 o'clock on Saturday for the rings, and I got the message today. You're gonna get Mike a ring too. That's really cool, man. You know,
right?
That's
right.
Really nice.
Right. It's gonna be exciting. You know, we have the Michael Hornsby, his book, and we're really excited about.
Oh yeah, let's talk about the cookbook.
And that's the so it's called Elite Black Belts Who Cook. And we have, you know, authors from around the country that have submitted their articles. It's available on Amazon. We're doing a special offering for your event. So we can, our goal is to get this book to become a Amazon number one best-selling book and make him an international best-selling author, along with the other co-authors. You know, you're a co-author in there, too. So everyone that's contributed to the book, you know, so it's not just Michael, but everyone, when we hit the number one bestseller list, everyone becomes a part of that because we're partners, you know, in the book. So, yeah, it is a beautiful book. My hard copy is coming in tomorrow. Soft copy came in today. It's a really informative book, and it's just not recipes, but it's all tied back to food and martial arts. So we got a lot of chapters in there just about, you know, food for your training in the martial arts, what you should have, what you shouldn't have. So it's not just a cookbook, but it is a healthy connection to martial arts. Then it has all the other, you know, the main meals. It has, desserts in there. So there's a lot of things. So this is the first book that's ever been written the way that we have put this book together. And so you can go to Amazon and look the book up, and that is Elite Black Belts Who Cook. Elite Black Belts Who Cook. And you can also you can go to our website, and guess what the website is? The website is also EliteBlackBeltsWhoCook.com. So, yeah, so we're really excited. Michael's excited, and, you know, his wife is excited. So we're really excited for any time we have someone that writes a book and that book turns out to become a great book. You know, they're really just helping society.
Well, I'm excited. Michael's going to be doing Cotter Wars Saturday morning, and, you know, that's an elite bottom competition. You have to have 100 first places to be invited. I've been trying to get Michael there for a couple of years. He's a great kind of guy. Now, let's go back to you a little bit. You did a weapon. You did the bow back when you competed. Is that correct?
Yes, sir, I did. I did.
Now, what? How did you learn the bow, and who taught you, and what have you done with it? What, quite a few championships?
Yeah, yes, sir. I've been blessed. I have been, when I look at my martial arts career and all the opportunities and things that I've experienced and being a competitor, and, I competed. I started teaching when I was a green belt, and Mr. Willendorf paid me $25 a week to come and show up. And my first class I ever taught, I walked off the floor so nothing could come out of my mouth. I trained with him in the morning classes. So I knew as much as the brown belts knew, and we had developed a relationship. So I started teaching as a green belt, and he, one of the first katas he started teaching me, and the weapons at green belt was called Bow One, very similar to the Okinawan Tokumini bow in that. So, no, I competed with
you
that.
Tomino-ku?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
I see Tomino-ku.
Yes, sir. Kata. That was my first kata. And when I started competing, the brown belts, especially in weapons, they had to compete with the black belts. So I was winning the black belt division, as a brown belt. And I had a lot of supporters. And I started studying my weapons study under Shion Larry Isaac, and he is
a
Okinawan.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Did you know Butch Valles? Did you ever meet Butch Valles?
Yeah, the guys out of South Carolina?
Yeah. Butch was a great
yes,
guy.
Sir.
Yeah, he was. But Larry Isaac was a tough guy. I bet. Do you remember Vernon Johnson?
Oh, yeah, I remember Vernon Johnson out of Virginia.
Did you? How about James Hobby? He was a good weapons guy, too.
Yep. Yep. Those guys are so. Saw a lot of their kickboxing fights, you had North Carolina. But if you wanted some really tough, South Carolina was definitely great competition. But if you wanted really super tough competition, then Virginia. That was a lot of the kung fu guys up in Virginia. But Virginia was a very competitive martial arts state.
Yeah, it was very competitive. I can't believe we never ran each other or ran across each other because I was with Sam Chapman for almost 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And
that was the first tournament. The first out-of-state tournament I went to was Sam Chapman's, and I was a blue belt when I competed there. And at that tournament was big, and I was scared to death. I think I accidentally hit somebody in my first match and won the first match, and then I got totally blown away the second match, and that happened for a whole year until Mr. Wellendorf started teaching me about visualization and mental rehearsal and applying that, and he studied a program called Silver Method. It used to be called Silver Mind Control, but I studied that program and went on to become a graduate of it, then went on to become an instructor. And so a lot of the inner training and things that I do is from that program. And I'm also a certified sports hypnosis coach, because it was so important to me that it was never my physical ability to perform. It was always my confidence. And once I discovered myself and I began to apply these inner concepts, that's what's really helped me not only my martial arts, but also has helped me in the growth. And, you always say to me, Hanshi, you got vision, but it is what you see on the inside and your ability to manifest what your visions are.
Right. Now, you also spoke at Nike conferences and other places that you're highly a speaker. Is that correct? Cool. Now,
I got involved. I got involved from the silver coaching and stuff of teaching seminars, and it was just again a blessing because I was already doing some business speaking, and I was at Duke for 29 years, and about 12 years before I retired from Duke, I was asked to come in and do a board-breaking experience for a group of executives from American Express. They were in Durham. So I went in, and I started talking about, you know, mental performance, visualization, and combine all those things together. And we did the seminar, and they discovered I was a certified coach. They asked me would I become a corporate educator. So I was, that's what I did. And, you know, the first corporate training that I did after the American Express was Swiss Re. And Swiss Re is in Switzerland. And Swiss Re is the bank that insures all of the other banks. So my first coaching job, big coaching job, was actually in Switzerland.
Wow. Well, it would be fun. Let's ask about your bowling, because I know you're an avid bowler. Tell me about that. When did you start doing that?
Well, you know, I'm good at everything I failed at. So, you know, I went bowling after a competition. I won first place in all the division, and so I went bowling with some folks I'd never bowled before. I think my first game was something like 25. They got on the PA system, and they made a big joke out of it. Congratulations to Jesse Bowen. Down on lane 15, just bowled a big 25. And everybody was clapping for me.
They made a joke. That's why, Hunty, I'm making you laugh. Guess what I used to do when I was a kid? I used to set up bowling pins. I used to wear the football helmet because the bowling pins would just fly everywhere. And I was a pin setter, and I got 25 cents a frame.
That's back in the day, sir.
Yes, it was. And 25 cents a lot of money to me.
Yeah, but that's how I got started. That's how I got started. You know, I never bowled before. I came back home that Friday. My martial arts school was right across from a bowling center. I'd never been to the bowling center before. So I went to the bowling center, and I paid the pro shop guy to start teaching me how to bowl. I bowled 50 games a week. I bowled so much that they stopped charging me for bowling. It was like having your own bowling center. I was involved in league play. Then I started doing tournament play, and I won my first check for $2,000. That was hooked. I did that, and I became the bowling coach for Duke University, assistant coach for North Carolina Central University. You know, I turned pro. I wrote a book called Zen Bowling, The Psychology of Better Bowling. And, you know, I helped Billy Oatman. Billy Oatman was the first African-American to become PBA Rookie of the Year. And like I said, I turned pro on the PBA Tour in April 15th, 2002.
Wow, that is really cool. Listen, Hunty, but don't go nowhere, okay? Because I'm going to bring you back. We're going to play the Legends name game. I'll hit you with a couple names, and you can talk about them, okay, sir? I'll be right back. Sir, did you hear me?
yes, sir. I hear you. Yes, sir.
Okay, I'll bring you right back, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm talking to my producer, Hunty Jesse Bowen, an amazing man, as you heard. Now, he's allowed me to put my vision to work on the radio show and to create what we call the five. Five incredible people from around the country, and along with my buddy co-host, Dean Piles and A.J. Perry, and we're going to talk about various topics. So I want to bring on the first lady of the group. I actually have two ladies, but this is the first lady. She's been with me from the beginning. She's an A3 black belt underneath the Sport Karate Museum. And I'm so proud that she's my friend. And in Hawaii, we say uncle or auntie. It's simple. It's Ohana. And she's definitely auntie. So I want to We call her Austin, I do this way, but her name is Karen Slatcher. Auntie, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am.
Hey,
I'm so glad to be here. Hi.
Well, I'm glad you're here. Now, the topic tonight is pretty simple. When you made black belt, how did you celebrate? What century was that? I'm just kidding.
Actually, I was a brown belt for over 16 years because the Vietnam War took all of our teachers away. And I was EQ, if you remember, that was first brown, so
yes.
My next belt would have been Shodan. And my teacher, S.L. Martin, left about a month before I could test, and he was called up quickly, so there was no time to test me quickly, and it just didn't happen. So
wow.
I had to wait. I just wasn't going to go and let anybody test me. I kept training, but got married, had a couple kids, that whole thing, and when I decided I wasn't having any more kids, I went back to the martial arts. Because I don't think the two mix. You know, pregnancy and martial arts just don't mix very well for me. So I waited, and then I had to find another Shorinru school. And I finally did, and he accepted me in, and he treated me like a brown belt from the very beginning. And I said, no, it's been too long. So I started at the beginning, and I took every Q test. And then the time came for me to test, and he said, his name was Jim Flaherty, and he said, when you're going to test in 1 month. And I said, oh, gosh, okay. And I was, panic city. And then he pretty much disappeared for a couple weeks and made me take over the whole school. And I had to run all the classes, and I had no time to train on my own because I was working and I had little kids at home. I had to get home and get them to bed. So that was a time in my life I didn't have a lot of my own time yet. So I was so frustrated that I wasn't getting the time that I thought I needed to get ready for my test. And then he came in the last couple weeks and, he was just brutal and made me test every kid, everybody. So then the day of my test, I was a wreck because I just didn't feel like I'd had enough time to get ready the way I wanted to test. And he had my husband come up with the kids, and a lot of the families came in. And so now I'm even more of a wreck. And he said to me, I want you to do your favorite form. So I did, which was Kusan Ku. And I got up and did Kusan Ku. And then he said, give me your complete first name. So I did, and he pulled out a black belt with my name embroidered on it. And he said, you've been testing all month, you just didn't realize it. And my jaw went into a spasm, and I was unable to speak or really eat much for about 3 weeks. The nerves just boom. And I stood there grinning at him, thinking, why can't I open my mouth? So we went out for ice cream.
That's a great story. That's a great story. I was saving my story, but I will tell you something. I went to my diary, and I was looking at it because I wanted to remember some of the crazy things that Teixeira made me do. You're going to love this. He took a corn cob. He split it open. He put a $100 bill in it, and he had a hog pen. It had about 15 hogs in it, and he said, Gary, if you can get this corn cob, I'm going to consider. I was a brown belt then. He said, I'm going to consider you taking me out to dinner when you get that $100 bill. I said, well, how am I going to get it? And he threw the corn cob in the middle of the hog pen.
Oh, my God.
And I had to get that corn cob out of 15 hogs. And that was a start. My black belt test. Now, when I got my black belt, I slept with it. I showered with it. I mean, I didn't let it out of my sight for weeks. But I got that $100 bill, Karen.
Yay.
And
you
that's
bet.
A crazy,
you
crazy, crazy world of Hawaiian karate. That's all I got to say.
Yeah.
Listen, Karen, you
well,
can sleep.
My teacher was a Marine, so he had the same mindset.
Understand.
He's just going to break
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Hurrah. Hurrah.
Hoorah.
Listen,
hoorah.
Karen, be sweet, and I'll talk to you
thank
real
you.
Soon, okay?
Okay, thank you.
You bet. That's Miss Karen Slatcher, my auntie, and we're going to go on with the five. Now, the next lady, She'll be at the Legends in a couple of days, and she is, golly Bob, she's a real champion. I remember her back in the 70s. Yeah, I'm that old. But she used to fight men, just like Karen used to. She was a champion's champion, and I want to bring her on right now. Miss Lewis Redlap. Not Lewis, I'm sorry, Lourdes. Hey, Lourdes. Lourdes, are you on mute?
How are you? I had my mute button. I'm sorry. Thank you for the nice.
It's okay. I mispronounced your name, so you missed that.
Yes.
So
Lourdes, no,
I'm
doing good.
Well,
I'm
sorry.
Good.
I didn't mean to say your name wrong. But it's taken me 6 months to learn how to spell it, let alone how to pronounce it.
But you,
is that French?
You have,
is that French? What is that? Lourdes Radulat. What nationality
it's French,
is that?
French. It's French.
It is French?
Lourdes.
Okay.
It's called Lourdes. And
Lourdes.
My last name
okay.
is
Lourdes. Okay.
The T is silent.
Well, you'll keep that. Well, the question is, how did you celebrate when you made black belt? What did you do?
Didn't celebrate too much. Our tests were 3 days, for 3 days. And so by the third day, you know, when we would finish and we'd have to do fighting, during my fight, we would, you know, I would fight, every belt test you'd have to fight at the end. And we had to fight, and I was down to my last, you know, few seconds before completing my test. And I'd get my nose broke a lot. I really have. And it looks really pretty too, because I've never
nose
been
broken.
Pardon me?
I just
it was
nose
it was
to be broken.
Let me tell you, he had to throw a towel over my face, and my nose was literally, honestly, laying on my face, on my left cheek. And he said he was very militant, military, U.S. Marine too. And so he threw a towel over my. I was busy fighting, and I only had a few seconds to finish. And when this occurred, and so he said he got in there, and I wanted to keep fighting. I kept thinking, God, that hurt. My nose hurt so bad. And I said, geez, you know. And he said, he comes and jumps into the ring because a lot of people would come watch our belt test. And he comes into the ring and throws a towel over my face, and he goes, get back, pushing me out of the ring. And I said, no, sir, no, sir, please let me finish. Please, I only have a few seconds left. Please let me finish. And because I thought, I don't want to take this test over again. And what happened was he told me to get on my knees. Sorry, get on your knees. But he was very militant. Get on your knees, you know, because I wouldn't listen to him and I wasn't obeying what he was telling me to do. And so I got on my knees, and he had the towel over my face. And he says, your nose is broke, and I'm going to push it back into place. And I was like, okay, you know, like I was very disappointed that he had pulled me out of the ring. And so he sat there. He was fantastic. He pushed my nose that was literally laying on my left cheek, and took his left thumb and put it on the right cheek. And it felt like he was pushing. He says, just hold still, you know. And it felt like his thumb was going literally through my face and into my inside my head. And then he took the other finger, his left, let's see, how in hell was it? Okay, my left hand was, his left hand was on my right side of my nose. And then his right hand was pushing my nose from the left side of my face back to the center of my face. And as he was doing this, I swear, thumb going all the way through my brain. And he really did a great job. And then afterwards, he says, he goes, okay, your nose is broke. You need to go to the ER and get your nose fixed. And I said, but sir, I didn't want to go because I wanted to get my right. And so he says, get in there in my office and call your father, because my father was a doctor. And call your dad and tell him to come get you. You need to go to the ER. And so I went in his office, and all the tests were almost finished anyway. And so he comes in.
That's a hell of a celebration. He says, for a black belt artist. That's a whole celebration. Getting your nose broken, going to the emergency room. Hell of a celebration. That's great.
Yeah. Go to the ER. No, but listen to this. When my dad was a doctor, and he says, if anybody, you know, he hated me going into karate and martial arts. He wouldn't talk to me. He would never, you know, he'd say, if anybody hurts you, I'm going to the school. I'm killing them. And so I said, you don't understand, sir. I cannot call my father. He'll come over here and kill you. My dad had already warned me, he said, if anybody ever really hurts you really bad, you know, I'm taking my gun with me.
Well,
and
that's a great story, Lourdes. I appreciate it so much. And I'll see you in a couple of days, okay?
It'll be wonderful to see everyone. Good evening, everyone.
You bet,
it'll be great to see you guys. Looking forward to it. Thank you.
You bet. You're the best. Thank you, honey. Ladies and gentlemen, that's Lourdes Radulat, part of the five. Did Adam James get on yet? Adam? Okay. I'm going to move to my hero. My hero, America's hero. This man is a Silver Star earner. He is a personal advisor for the Sportcraft Museum. He is part of the advisory board, military board, that helps chooses military awards from the Sportcraft Museum. He is a ninth degree black belt underneath the Sportcraft Museum. He is a Sika champion. He trained in Okinawa. Again, he's an American hero. He's a Marine. Hurrah! He is my friend. He is one of my best friends. And he'll be at the Legends in a few days. And he'll be at the booth for the radio show. He'll be roaming around with his good-looking mustache. And I want to bring him on right now. Colonel Phil Torres. Colonel, are you there, sir?
Yes, sir, I am. And again, thank you for that introduction. Doing well, my
well,
brother. Sorry that we're going to miss you.
All day
to miss you.
To make it a good introduction. Trust me. So that was AJ saying hello to you, by the way. That was AJ saying hello to you.
Yeah, yes, I know. We are all going to miss him.
Yeah, thanks, Colonel.
We are. But, Colonel, tonight, question. How did you celebrate when you made black belt? Did you make black belt in Okinawa or here in America?
Actually, it was neither in Okinawa or America. It was in Cuba. It was I was stationed at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, in the mid-60s. And the way I got promoted was unorthodox. We didn't have a brick and mortar place where we went to. It was a group of us, all Marines, all martial arts backgrounds from different styles. We came together several times a week, and we trained. It could have been at the gym. It could have been at the park. It could have been at outside some barracks, but we trained together. But we all have one common theme that we all wanted to get out of our practice, and that was purely street self-defense, defending against unarmed people and defending against armed people, especially knife fighting. So everything we did and the testing we all did, as we came together as an organized group, without a defined place to practice at, was all about how good, how effective you were in a real scenario, self-defense situation out on the street. We didn't use rubber knives. We used real knives. And I either got to kick the knife out of your hand or I got cut. It was one or the other.
Right.
Lucky for me, I was able to disarm everybody that I came up against, regardless of how they came up on me. So it was.
Well, how did you celebrate? When you made Bubba,
well,
how did you celebrate?
There wasn't any type of external celebration other than internal. To me, I felt great. I had achieved a great life goal, but it wasn't an organized celebration.
Right.
It was more of celebrating the moment that I had aspired to for years.
Cool. Well, Colonel, I can't wait to see you in a couple of days, and I'm sure that golly bum, I'm just overwhelmed by getting to see you. And like I told my listeners, you're my hero, and I really appreciate you so much being a part of my journey, Colonel. It really means a lot.
Well, thank you, sir, but the feeling is mutual. I am honored to be here. I'm honored to help you with your vision, all of our vision, as we move forward,
yes,
and celebrate our life achievements in the martial arts.
Yes, sir. I'll see you in a couple of days, sir.
Yes, sir.
All right. God bless you. Ladies and gentlemen, that is
the care, Colonel.
Bill Torres. And if you want to meet him, he'll be at the Legends this weekend at the beautiful 5-star hotel West Chase Marriott in Houston, Texas. We'll have a huge vendor show. We got a celebration for Jerry Smith, another Marine. We got a celebration for all the women. We've got a celebration for Mr. Mike Stone. He's never been promoted in 65 years, and he's asked the museum to step up and honor him. Well, we stepped up. We're going to present him over 10 different presentations to recognize him being a 10th degree black belt, including some Hall of Fames and some surprises that I'm not telling nobody. But now this next person of the five, I want to bring him on. He is one of the people he's doing a seminar at the Legends this weekend. And together in the past couple of years, we've got to honor an incredible group of men and women through the United States Martial Arts Black Belt Hall of Fame. Now, I know there's dozens of Hall of Fames out there, and God bless them all, but there's only a couple I know that give back, and one of them is this group, the United States Martial Arts Hall of Fame. And I happen to have the president. That's right, the man that runs the whole show on the radio show every week. And I'm so glad to have him. He's known as the Black Belt Leader, Mr. John Terry. Oh, Dr. John Terry. Dr. Terry, you there, sir?
I am here, my friend.
How are you, John?
I am well, thank you. Excited about this.
Good. Event,
and like many others,
now, when you made black belt,
and looking forward to it.
When you made black belt, how did you celebrate, John?
You know, Professor, when the school that I was in was a very old school type of school, and after testing was over, we always went to dinner with our instructor, and he had a buffet that we always went to eat at because that's what he liked to eat. All the black belts sat at one table, and all of the colored belts sat at another table. And I remember earning my black belt and having the opportunity to walk into that restaurant and for the very first time being invited to sit at the table with the other black belts, the instructors and the assistant instructors and all the people that had trained me for so long. It was just kind of, I felt like that I had arrived, but with that also the responsibility that I've got to set the example and continue to train because those at the table behind me want to take my place. And my responsibility is to also help them.
Well, that's a good point because I went to the same thing in Hawaii. they had two separations. The underbelts were set in one area of the luau, and the black belts were set in one area of the luau. And I remember when I finally made black belt at 14, I was allowed to sit with the black belts at the luau. I thought I was hot and stuff. And it was so much power in my mind to know that I moved up. So I understand that story very deeply. Now, Dr. Terry, you're going to be doing a seminar, and you'll have a booth. You're going to be doing a lot of cool things with the legends this weekend. And, you know, the black belt leader, that's going to be pretty cool. When did that come out? When did you bring that up at? How long have you been doing that?
You know, I've been doing that, the leadership thing I've been doing for almost three decades. The black belt leader really came out of my Hall of Fame induction in 2008 into the United States Martial Arts Hall of Fame, and people started calling me, "You're that black belt leader guy." Well, the next thing I knew, everybody was calling me the black belt leader, and it stuck. So that's kind of become my handle and my tag and the way I'm often introduced. And it's a different way to look at leadership. You know, why just be a leader when you can be a black belt leader?
I've really enjoyed the little messages I get in my email from the black belt leader. And it's really enjoyable, your insight and your wisdom for you being on the five. It really means a lot. And
I'm honored to be here.
Can't wait to see you in a couple of weeks.
Very good, my friend. I'll see you this weekend. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's Dr. John Terry, the president of the United States Martial Arts Hall of Fame. One of the Hall of Fames that the museum supports deeply. If you go to the webpage, www.sportcrimemuseumarchives.com, and go to the index, you can see the treasures page. You see all the history journals. You'll see a page of the United States Martial Arts Hall of Fame and other things that will bring up to date what's going on around in America. Now, did Adam James get on yet? I know he's working late on the set of Doc Savage, but I tell you what, I'm going to bring on my other doctor friend. Now, for years, for almost 6 years, I put these guys all around America, South Carolina, New Jersey, California, and then Texas a couple of times. And they'll be there again this incredible weekend for Mike Stone and Karen Herdman and Jerry Smith. And I'm talking about virtual reality. They're called SetVR. Unleash, I believe it's called now. Anyway, I've got the inventor, the co-inventor. I've got Marie Shanahan and Rick Shanahan and this man. He's a 9-3 black belt underneath the Sport Crime Museum. Trained extensively in Kung Fu. Trained with the great Rick Williamson. And he is a co-inventor of the virtual reality platform that the Sport Crime Museum deals with. His name is, now he's a real doctor. He's a medical doctor, saves lives every day. I'll bring him on right now, Dr. Reginald Lee. Dr. Lee, you there?
Yes, I am. Good evening, sir. How are you?
Good evening, Dr. Lee. How are you?
Good. Excellent. We're super excited about it.
Take a minute and explain to my listeners the new SetVR.
Absolutely. With SetVR XL Unleashed, you will not be outside looking into our program. You'll be actually immersed into a training program, in a virtual reality program, and totally immersed in a simulation program moving 360 degrees in a cutting-edge program whereby a hologram will attack you when you least expect it with sudden and random attacks. Just like the simulation programs for the military and police, this is a simulation program for self-defense for martial arts. You've chosen a dark alleyway where bad things usually happen, whereby a hologram will get into your personal space prior to that sudden attack to create an adrenaline effect. During this adrenaline surge, the fight or flight mode is whereby one would normally lose about 35-40% of what they've been taught, and whereby using muscle memory or reflex response, would be your only and best recourse to neutralize your attacker. Just as I mentioned before, as a metaphor, placing your hand on a hot stove and moving reflexively. That's the program of SetVR. Or imagine being in a program where you continue to train in movement, moving angular, linear, and circular to avoid an attack, or basically to avoid your attacker and place you in a position of neutralization. To practice the art of Tai Sabaki. With the Oculus Rift or Oculus Quest headset, you'll be transported into a virtual reality platform where a hologram will confront you and attack you when you least expect it with sudden and random attacks. The goal of SetVR is to be able to neutralize a sudden, unpredictable attack that is random, to improve your skills in evasion, to moving angular, linear, and circular, and place you in a position of advantage of neutralization to neutralize without hesitation. As I mentioned, just like placing your hand on a hot stove and developing a reflex response. This is a program whereby you continue to practice your skills that you've taught in your cars and forums in your schools, in techniques, on a program of application to practice anytime, anywhere, when you want. We've implemented a program of mindfulness and stretching, meditation exercise, and we'll also present you with your own personal yoga instructor. Please continue to visit us at our website at setvrxl.com. We continue to be proud to endorse Professor Gary Lee and Sports Karate Museum to be the future platform of Professor Gary Lee's vision of the Sports Karate Museum and virtualized with SetVR, whereby we have introduced Professor Gary Lee as the Wisdom Warrior at the gate of the system portal. But before meeting the Wisdom Warrior, one must be able to neutralize the hologram attacker and then be brought back into the courtyard to meet the core history generals. Professor Gary Lee, some few words about your vision of the Sports Karate Museum and virtual reality with SetVR.
Well, Dr. Lee, my vision is very simple. Elders, respect, knowledge. Those three words you've allowed the Sports Karate Museum to be a part of that. And we've taken your vision and immersed with the history general portals. That were all the history generals. That when you go to the webpage of the Sport Karate Museum Archives and see those amazing men and women, they'll be in the portals eventually. Now, we started with a core group, four people, individuals that start out the History Journal portal, and not any particular order. Judge Roy Kervin, the man that brought the two-point kick to the world. George Minshew, first man of the Big Six tournament in America, the Karate Olympics, and the first man to bring a gold ring to open competition. Chris Minshew, an NBO world champion, and Mr. Mike Dillard, the owner of Century Martial Arts, the largest martial art manufacturer in the world. That core group is there right now. They're the start of the History Journal portals and the vision to show the elders the respect and the knowledge of what they did. And I want to thank you to all those developers and to the inventors, Marie Shanahan, Rick Shanahan, and Dr. Reginald Lee, for allowing the Sport Karate Museum to be a part of it. Now, this weekend, you have a special suite for anybody that's very, let's say, doesn't really want to show their kicks and punches to the people who'll be down there. They go up to the suite. But we will have a booth, and we have the optional Quest 2, and people will be able to try, actually, SetVR. So, Reggie, you be cool, and I'll talk to you real soon, okay?
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome, Reggie Lee, Dr. Reginald Lee, my friend. Now, did Adam James get on yet? Golly bum, I'm missing Adam. I'm going to bring back my special guest, Auntie Jesse Bullen. You there, sir?
I am, sir. I am.
Well, it's been a pretty cool show, but we're going to end it with a bang. I'm going to hit you with a name, and this was invented by the great Bob White. Rest in peace, Bob. And a few years ago, when we created this show, Bob said, look, Let's do something. Let's say a name at the end of the show for your guest to talk about them. Somebody to have a name, and Hachi Bowen, you got 2 minutes to talk about them. You ready?
I'm ready.
Bill Wallace.
Wow. Superfoot, my hero. You know, coming up, you know, I learned from, you know, Bill Wallace, if it had his name on it, I bought it, the Stretch Master, had all of his books, and then I was fortunate enough to meet him after I opened up my schools. I started bringing him in for training seminars, but I learned my flexibility and quick kicking skills from him, and he's been an avid supporter of everything that we've actually done. You know, a great legend that I'm honored to have an opportunity to, you know, have a teacher relationship and professional relationship with.
You get to hang out with him Friday night. That's cool.
Oh yeah.
Okay,
oh,
I got
yeah.
a letter for you. Joe Lewis, rest in peace, Joe Lewis.
Oh wow. Wow, you know, that was, you know, in my early days around that brown belt level, he would come to Raleigh. He lived in Knightdale, North Carolina. But when he was in town, he trained at our school. I had a great opportunity to meet him and for him to, you know, pull me to the side, teach me some things, show me some very valuable things about fighting. As I said before, I lost every match that I ever fought until, you know, Joe Lewis started teaching me something. My teacher taught me about my mental game, and I, you know, I had a deadly sidekick, you know, and, you know, how he taught me how to load, you know, to disguise that sidekick. And so, you know, you were really in trouble, you know, from that sidekick that I learned from Joe Lewis. And then when I opened up my schools, I brought him in again to teach seminars.
I got one for you that's one of my favorite people. He'll be there this weekend. The founder of the PKA, the great Joe Corey.
Wow. Another great mentor. You know, we met, I don't know, I guess 15 years ago. And, you know, we met because, you know, I was running the AMA Hall of Fame, and a friend of mine out of Charlotte, Jerome Johnson, Magic Johnson, had me to invited him to be our guest speaker, and we hit it off right away, and from that moment we continued a calling and talking to and supporting each other, and he's a mentor. He's a friend, and he is the anchor reason for the Who's Who in the Martial Arts books, because without his continual support and really drive behind me to be able to make these things happen. So, you know, great friend, a great mentor. You know, it's truly an honor, the three names you just named, to have an opportunity to learn from them. You know, Mr. Coral is a great promoter, a great marketer, very innovative person, speaker. So I learned so much from him. Every time we talk, I learn something.
I got one more for you, my dear friend Carlos, Mr. Chuck Norris.
Well, you know, that was, you know, my life changed back in 1978. I was a brown belt, and he had a school in Virginia Beach, Virginia.
Yes.
And I went to his tournament, and, you know, he was doing photo shoots. I went over, I did a photo shoot, and we talked a few moments, and he shook my hand and says, "You keep going. You know, you keep going. You're going to make it. Keep going." And, you know, that was it. And I wanted to be like Chuck Norris. And, you know, that was it. And I have that picture, still have that picture, that brown belt picture of shaking hands, you know, with Grandmaster Norris, and then having the blessed opportunity back here just a few years ago, 2020, Martial Arts Masters and Pioneers book featuring him on the cover, you know, the opportunity to partner with him, and became our bestseller book. Had over 500 pages, over 250 martial artists featured in the book. But another great, you know, person in my life, and that's what I sort of talk about, is the people who've influenced me.
I got something to share with our listeners. Congratulations, because this year, a month ago, I put Gina and Chuck into the London Blackball Hall of Fame, and they went to London to accept it. In 2 days, you will be inducted into the London Hall of Fame at the same time that your hero Chuck Norris is being put in, or was put in this year. Same time Mike Stone is being put in. So that's all of Europe, Hunty. Now all of Europe will know of Hunty Desimone, and that's exciting to me because, you know, conquering America is cool, and that's what we've done. But with this motion and you being put into the London Hall of Fame, we're conquering Europe now. We're going to conquer Europe, Hunty Bowen. Thank you so much for being on the show tonight. And let me put you against the wall and talk to you and dig your history. I love the fact that you're such a bowler. I knew you were good, but I didn't know you were that good. Tammy was just smiling because she's the bowl. And she goes, golly, I didn't know Hunty Bowen was that good. I love it.
I'm blessed, and you know, and I'm very, and that's the first, you know, that's the first thing I want to really share is that I'm truly blessed to be in the martial arts and having the mentors of martial artists that I've had in my life, and having them to direct me. And I want to, you know, leave you with a little bit more information that tonight makes 811 episodes that we've hosted. And 15,837 listeners.
Well, you know what, Auntie Bowen? Honestly, I'm going to tell you, it's been an amazing little journey, you and I. And this weekend is going to be like a cherry on top of the sundae because of all those goats in one room together. And thank you so much for allowing the Sport Karate Museum to be a part of this journey with the AMAA Network. And thank you for the interview tonight. And I'll see you in a couple of days, sir.
All right, sir. Thank you.
You bet. Ladies and gentlemen, that's the Hunty Jesse Bowen and the Amazing Five and my dear friend, Dr. Lee. And again, thank you. Thank you for allowing us to come in your home on Tuesday night and share with you sport karate history. And remember, you can always go to www.sportkarateMuseumArchives. That's archives.com. And you can see all the excitement that people are talking about. Heck, we had over 13,000 hits last month. Go there and check it out. You'll see what everybody is talking about. It just, it's really cool. But anyway, it's been a great show tonight. Very personal show because this is a show before we make history in a couple of days. And I want to thank again everybody. And we say this every week. And we mean it from the heart. Much mahalo. Aloha. Good night, everybody.
Aloha. Have a good time this weekend. I'll miss you.
Good night.
Oh, not going?
No, can't do it.
Oh, no.
Wish I could. Doctor said no way.
I was really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I was looking forward to seeing everybody.
Yeah. Boy.